Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another fun episode. How's everybody doing out there? Hopefully you're doing well, thankfully. I'm very, very relieved that this episode, I don't have to do a remembering episode, right? I did one for Dennis Condrey. We did one for Fred Lynn. Thankfully, we don't need to do one for this episode. On this episode, my guest is former wrestler Tom Stone. Tom has tons of stories about working for the AWA, WWE, several other territories. It's such a fun interview, and it was such a pleasure chatting with Tom. So let's take a quick break, and we'll get right to it. My interview with Tom Stone. Phil Center Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by former professional wrestler Tom Stone. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. Just old.
Well, yeah, okay. We're all getting old. But tell me, Tom, growing up, your father was the ring announcer for shows in Milwaukee, correct?
Milwaukee, Green Bay, Rockford, and then the spot shows around Milwaukee.
Yeah, so is that how your interest in pro wrestling began?
Yeah, actually what happened was my high school girlfriend decided to find a new guy. And I didn't have nothing else to do but go down to the matches for a while. So I started going to the matches, became a heel fan, tried to antagonize the people around me. And then later I ended up becoming the timekeeper. And it looked like a neat business. So I thought, well, I'm going to try to get into it. And I had known Frank Hill, who became Jules Strongbow. Uh-huh. For a few years back in college, I did some security guard work, and he was driving a truck on that on Sundays, and we would sit and talk wrestling. And so he helped me get booked. It wasn't nearly as glamorous as it looked when the guys were flying into Milwaukee, though.
Yeah, a little different, isn't it?
I didn't realize I would spend my weekends driving all over the Midwest. Yeah.
So, who did you train with then? Did you get, was it like more on the spot training, or how did that work?
I started off at a local promotion in town, and I don't even know if they had a name back at the time.
Yeah.
And by my third match, I was actually booking the shows. So I kind of self-trained myself. I did go to Lou Klein's wrestling school in Detroit. I stayed there about 2 weeks because he would train me on Tuesday, and then he'd go out on the road for the week, and he'd come back the next Tuesday. And by the third week of him teaching me a headlock, I said, well, I'm not sticking around here. And I got in my car and came home. And then I started working out with Frank Hill. We worked out on a boxing ring in Milwaukee. And then one day Frank said, you want to go to St. Louis? So I did. And 2 weeks later, he said, you want to go to Minneapolis? So I did.
Okay, and so you follow Frank around. You went with him.
He was booking the job guys for Kansas City, St. Louis, and Minneapolis.
Yeah, okay.
And then he went full-time, and then they turned that job over to me.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's you're working with Frank Jules, and working with him, traveling with him. He's booking the preliminary guys, which is getting you work. You worked St. Louis, Central States, a little Mid South, all that before you went to the AWA or
I was in I started in about 76 doing TV in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Minneapolis.
Oh, gotcha. And okay.
In 79, I decided I was going to try doing it full time. So I went to Kansas City, and then they sent me to Mid South.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then while I was in Mid South, I met, I can't think of his name now. He did the Stan Stacy. I came in.
Uh-huh.
And he booked me to go to Portland in the fall of 1980.
Okay.
So around May 1st, I called Wally in Minneapolis and said, I want to come home for the summer. Can you use me? And he said, sure. Yeah. So based on that, I went to Bill Watts and told Bill I was coming home. I was going to leave in 2 weeks and go home.
Uh-huh.
I got home and called Wally, and he said, we don't have any spots for you. So I basically went and sold cars. I quit wrestling.
Yeah.
And then I was a terrible car salesman. And I mean, if you offered me full price, I probably didn't sell you the car. That's how bad I was. So it was probably 82. And I called, might have been 81, late in 81. I called Geigel down in Kansas City and said, what if I came in as a manager? Because I think I didn't have the Hulk Hogan body. And that's what they were looking for at the time.
Yeah.
But I could have managed and been like Heenan. And so I was set to go back to Kansas City. And about 3 days later, I got a job at the electric company in Milwaukee. All Bennies, 401k.
Yeah.
And I called Geigel and said, nah, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't wrestling at all. And my buddy Jake Milliman.
Yeah.
He was booking the guys for the TVs for Vern.
Yep.
And he called me and said, do you want to go do Vegas? And he knew damn well as soon as I went, I was going to end up taking over booking the guys.
Yeah, okay.
But Jake and me are good friends. And still are to this day. And so we started doing Vegas. And then Terry Garvin, who had been in the Kansas City office when I was there, was booking the TV guys for New York, for WWF.
Right, right, yeah.
Harry called me and started saying, can you get guys for us? So that's kind of the whole And then at the end, we were still running local shows and we were running outlaw promotions all over the Midwest. I mean, I was working all the time and I was training guys. Probably my most successful guys are Chandra's Texas Hangman, who ended up going to Japan and Germany and Puerto Rico. And so that's kind of my whole career in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, and right. And they, everybody knows how like the stars move, right? You'd go to a territory 6 months or so, move on somewhere else, right? Keep it fresh. So with you working more like enhancement type stuff, booking enhancement guys, did you get to stay at a territory a little longer sometimes? I mean,
well, no, I was in Kansas City for about 5 months and they changed bookers. Bob Sweetan was the booker when I went there.
Yeah.
And Jody Hamilton came in and then he wanted his own crew. So Jody Hamilton sent me to Mid-South. And my first match, we were in Shreveport, and it was an interesting setup in Mid-South, at least in the Shreveport Arena, because the dressing rooms were on opposite ends of the building.
Yeah.
So you never got to talk to your partner. You never got to talk to the guy you were wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, I found out the next morning because I stayed at Jake Roberts' house, and Jake told me the next day we were driving to La Ronger. He says their plan was to fire me that night. I had a decent match with Jerry Oates, who to this day I've never met. I mean, I met him in the ring and I called the whole match.
Yeah. But
I've never talked to him since. I never talked to him that night except saying, grab a headlock.
Yeah, which is funny, right? I mean, especially if someone's a modern wrestling fan, I don't know that they would understand that, right? Because now...
So, nowadays, suppose... they set it all up in the dressing room, but our whole deal was... If I took you to the ropes and I said, hit me.
Yeah.
You hit me and the people didn't do anything. Now it's my job to find out what the people want.
Right. Yeah.
The day they set up this whole match. In fact, I was at one in Milwaukee, this is probably 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was a tag match and the guy was clapping. And I don't know if you remember Buck Zumhoff. They probably did it with the Rock and Roll Express.
Yep.
People are all clapping with him.
Yeah.
And rather than let them clap, they were determined they were going to do the next high spot. And I looked at him, I said, you know, you only got so many bumps. Why would you do that?
Right. Yeah. They took out that crowd element, right? I mean, you're not working the crowd. You're not doing the crowd.
We did it to work the crowd. We wanted the crowd to get involved.
Yeah.
We wanted, now they set up all these moves. And if the people buy it or not, that's what they're doing.
Yep.
I don't get that. Why that's any fun?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is weird. I don't know. Maybe it's. I don't really watch modern wrestling much. I can't associate with it. I don't enjoy it. Maybe that's. I'm sure that's why.
Well, I haven't watched it since 1990.
Yeah.
Even when I was still wrestling, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it's got to be a different perspective for you, right? It's a business. It's a job for you, right? I mean, is it once you're on the road and doing all this?
Job.
Does that take a little of the joy out of it?
No, it was a job like, you know, most people on a Sunday, if they needed a part-time job, they worked at 7-Eleven for $5 an hour.
Yeah, right.
I would drive maybe 2 hours to Green Bay and 2 hours back, and I'd make $2.50.
Yeah.
And because I was the heel, I got to lead the match with whoever I was working with.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, so I was the one directing the crowd, and that's the fun of it. It don't matter who wins or loses. I mean, I figured it out. I could lose every night, and all I had to do was let my opponent get on the floor, go over and spit at him and tell him to get back in the ring and give me 5 more minutes. And then dive out over the top rope when he came in, let him get his hand up one more time. And I, you know, say, screw you. And they didn't beat me because I got the last thing on him. I spit at him. I did whatever. So I could lose every night. It didn't matter to me. long as I got a check in the mail on Tuesday.
Right. And in that day and age when you're, you know, the objective is, it's not the win or losing, it's the work in the crowd, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted, sure, I would have loved to have been a star.
Sure.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it was still, when you get to go out in front of, I mean, one night we were in Minneapolis and we had a sold out crowd and we had pay-per-view next door. I think Hogan was on top with Nick.
Yeah.
And I got to wrestle Pat Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a thrill of a lifetime because Pat was one of the guys I really admired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and nobody would know the fun we were having in the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows Pat was gay, right?
Yep.
We're getting the instructions from the referee, and he looked at me, and he pointed his finger at me, and he said, kid, just remember, if I get behind you, you're fucked. And I got to not laugh. And then I'm making my comeback. For once, I was a babyface, and he's on the mat going, kiss me on the lips, Mary. Kiss me on the lips. And yeah. You get a straight face. I mean, so, yeah. The fun was just playing with the crowd, and we were in there. Most of us were friends, and so we were having fun with each other, too.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't feel like work, right? It was like, you know, you're in there, you're, like you said, with friends. It's spontaneous. You're feeding off the crowd. I mean, that's right. It doesn't feel like a job, does it? I mean,
no, it wasn't a job. It was what I wanted to be doing.
Sure.
And to go and have, I mean, because I did it on some of the local shows, you'd make $10, $20.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'd work for Minneapolis, I didn't mean the worst I was ever going to get was $100. But there were a lot of $300 and $400, $500 paydays. And I mean, you couldn't find a better part-time job that you were actually having fun. And most of the time you're sitting in a car screwing around. I mean,
Did you even as a
job guy, it was fun. It was a blast.
Yeah. Did you have another job during this time? Did you maintain your job with the electric company or do anything else?
Yep. I was a customer service rep. I was either a collector for the electric company. I was their special collector. I went to big businesses and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I got a customer service job with their sister company, the gas company in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they let me work extra hours on Monday and Tuesday so I could leave early on Friday. And they'd, so it was, I basically could work 10-hour days. And then if I needed days off to go Tuesday and Wednesday to go for New York, they didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, perfect, right? You got the one job with benefits and retirement and all that. And then you get to go.
Yep. And you hurt yourself in the ring and you should go and get hurt Monday morning falling down some stairs too. Not that I ever did.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Of course not. I mean, right. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. It was all up front. Job accidents. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of people, what you did, right, is what so many people call enhancement work. Some people
I hate that term. We were job guys.
Okay.
I was a jobber. I was not enhancement talent.
I was
better than some of the guys I was enhancing.
Right.
I was there to do a job for them to get them over. But I know some guys really didn't like being called a jobber. But as far as I'm concerned, I was a jobber.
Yeah, that's funny, right? Because that is the modern perception, right? So many people now think, oh, jobber's a bad term.
Yeah, it's like if you're homeless, you're not homeless, you're unhoused. Yeah.
Yeah, and they want to call them enhancement, right? Because, or whatever.
But Vince did that to try to make guys feel better.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and for my point is, for people who don't know wrestling, you know, that is a very important, whatever you want to call it, it's a very important role. And it's back then. Yeah, it's often missed. Right, yeah. It's often misunderstood. But and during your time, we talked about you trained a lot of guys. You were booking a lot of guys for the job work. What did you teach these guys about doing the job matches? Because, right, the objective is a little different for you guys going into these matches, right?
Well, yeah, you basically, as a job guy, if you're doing television,
right,
your job is to figure, number one, you've only got 2, 3, 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you do whatever they want. But I taught my guys to always be suggesting things, not for themselves, but for the other guy.
Right. Yeah.
So if I was working with Bockwinkle on TV, he pretty much did what I wanted to do because I'm doing for him what I think I do best.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot depends on if they know you, if they're comfortable with you, because their jobs are on the line, right?
Right.
If I go out and hurt the guy, they're the ones. I have a job on Monday. I'm going to get paid.
Yep. Yep.
They're not.
Right.
So some of it depended on who you were wrestling. And because I'd been in the AWA so long and I'd been in Mid-South and I'd been in Kansas City, I knew a lot of the guys. But mm-hmm. some guys are difficult. Bret Hart was very difficult. Mm-hmm. He didn't trust me. So he's protecting himself, and I understand that. So it kind of all depended, again, who you were working and what. If it was, let's say it's Nick. Mm-hmm. Nick had been in the AWA for 10 years, 15 years. He got there in 71, I think. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got to wrestle him, it was probably 78, 79. He'd been there 10 years. Well, he didn't need to do a squash match because he was already the champion. And so he didn't need to beat me in 2 minutes.
Right.
I could actually work with Nick and be able to cover him on TV. Where if they were just bringing in somebody, then you got to get them over quicker. I mean,
right. It's, man, wrestling's such a peculiar business, isn't it?
But TV is so different because I could wrestle Rick Martel on TV and he'd beat me in 3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But if I worked him the next night in a house show, we'd go 14.
Yeah.
You know, because it's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, wrestling's so crazy like that. Right? It's so situational and different objectives. And when you watch a match like that, when you watch it, say you're watching a Tom Stone versus Nick Bockwinkle match. For the general fan, right, Nick Bockwinkle's the star. He's the guy that's, right, dominating this match or whatever, you know, TV match or whatever it may be. But really, at the core, right, Tom Stone's the important one in the match.
Well, see, at that point, when I was – a lot of the guys in Minneapolis, they tried to have actual matches with me on TV because mm-hmm. I could work and I could get their asses over. But then they were beating somebody.
Right, yeah.
But again, it's who you're wrestling, right?
Yeah, and again, it is, right? It's who you're in there with, what the situation is, what the play. I mean, there's so many factors. It's very unique. And you talked about, right, you went to WWE with, you know, Terry Garvin, right? You said that was your connection.
Yep.
To get there and work. So what, I mean, obviously, right, that's, it's you know, a bigger situation, a bigger company. Bigger crowd at that time. What was that like working from something like in the AWA where you're talking about these guys like Nick and everybody trust you, will work with you, to moving
well,
to the
again,
WWE?
The guys, I worked with Jake Roberts in WWE two or three times. He'd ask for me because we had wrestled like for a month straight down in Louisiana. And in Louisiana, I actually, Buck Robley put me in charge of training Dizzy Ed Golden, who became Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Yeah.
So I would wrestle them. You know, I'd tell Brutus, if you're going to cut my hair, don't cut too much. And he'd just take a little snippet where he cut other people bald.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of depended who I was wrestling there. Mm-hmm. Because if they were people I knew from the AWA or from Mid-South, they would have matches with me.
Yeah.
And there were other guys who had matches with me. X-Pac, who actually on some podcast said I was the best jobber of all time.
Oh.
I thank him for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was or not, but I mean, that was pretty good. Yeah. But then you'd wrestle other guys. And sometimes I didn't understand why they would fly me somewhere. One night they flew me and Trevor Adonis, but that was Jimmy Evans, mm-hmm. out to San Francisco.
Okay.
And they put me in a match with the Powers of Pain.
Okay.
Why would you fly a guy who can work? And I actually went to Pat Patterson the next day and said, what the hell was that? I ended up with a concussion. And but I said, well, why would you fly me here? And he bitched out Chief and Rene Goulet, who booked the TV guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just stupid to fly me 2,000 miles when anybody could have gone out and got their ass kicked.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And again, right, it's that understanding the situation, understanding the guys. You mentioned Jake, right? You knew Jake from Mid-South. And in this, what the one match that a lot of people remember you for is in 1990 when you got a DQ win against Jake when they were doing the build against him and Martel for WrestleMania and everything else. In that, did Jake request you in that match?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
See, when I wrestled in Louisiana, he had a broken arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to be really careful not to re-break it, because the night after he had wrestled me for like the whole month, he wrestled Tank Patton and re-broke it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he requested me. I mean, you don't know that. When you get to the building, they just had a sign up that said Stone versus Roberts or Snake versus Stone. So you never knew, but my guess is he did.
Yeah. And I mean, I know you, again, the wins, losses, you say don't matter, whatever. But then it's got to be a cool thing because people remember that, right? They remember the match that Tom Stone got a DQ win.
Yeah, I got a win. He DDT'd me and he kept beating on me. Yeah, it's not much of a win. I did get a win on AWA TV once, though. A real win.
Yeah, well, because when you went back to the AWA, was it during that time period? Because you were in a little.
I don't remember. I couldn't tell you when it was. It was against Rooster Griffin.
Ah, I remember Rooster, right? He's because I'm from Indiana originally, and Rooster worked in Indianapolis.
He worked for Bruiser. He came up and did TV, and they needed one more match, and they said, well, why don't we put Stone with Rooster? And so I got to beat him on TV. I actually won a tag match. Me and Olsenowski beat Stan Hansen and Bobby Duncan.
Really?
Yep.
Was that a DQ win?
No. No, no. I didn't get the pin. Steve got the pin.
Okay.
And then Steve got to pick a new partner when they did the house show. So I didn't think that was fair.
No, of course not. But when you did go back to the AWA, right, you did have a little bit more prominent position.
Oh, I was working the AWA and WWF at the same time.
Okay, right. Okay.
I had called Greg and said they offered this to me, and he said, go ahead. So I was working house shows for both at the same time.
Gotcha. Okay. But I remember you when you were those final years that you and Jake Milliman that you mentioned earlier were part of that Team Challenge series.
The dumbest thing ever.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because fans joke about it all the time. So what did the wrestlers think of this concept?
Well, they were just trying to do something different. The problem was, we had our teams, right?
Uh-huh.
But guys kept leaving in the middle of it.
Right.
I was on Sarge's team, and I think Jake was on, I think he was on Zabisco's team. But I could be totally wrong about that. I knew I was on Sarge's team. But by the time we got to that final match, the Sarge was gone. He was back in WWF.
Yeah.
And then they put three guys. It was me and I think Todd Becker and Jake. And they put us in a three-way match that none of us had ever done. No one did that up until that point.
Yeah, right.
And they didn't tell us anything. They didn't tell us what they wanted or nothing. So me and Jake set up the finish, and then they got all, after the match, they were all mad at Jake because he, whatever I had done to him, he kind of got up right away and DDT'd Becker. But we'd never done a three-way match or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Triple threat match. We'd never done that. I'd never seen one before.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, go out and do it. But it was such a stupid concept.
Yeah, because it's like they were trying something, but they didn't know what they were wanting to accomplish.
They were just trying to stay in business.
Yeah, and they didn't for much longer.
Everybody was leaving, and they were using, you know, guys who, I mean, God bless them, some of them. Just, I mean, they weren't main event guys. I'm not going to knock any of them.
No, 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 no.
I mean, they even used my Texas Hangman buddies.
Yeah, right, yeah.
In fact, we did one TV taping where they put the Texas Hangman with the executioner. That was me under a hood.
Oh.
And we wrestled the three Guerrero brothers.
Right, and okay.
Yeah, but it was a rib for the Hangman. Because the Guerreros didn't sell anything for them. They only sold for me, even though the Hangmen were coming in.
Yeah.
It was just, I know Greg, I'm sure Greg told him to do that as a rip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, AWA was a little bit of a mess, right? They, at that time and on the way out. And we've talked about, right? You, there was the team challenge stuff, the Jake Roberts match, the one win you got, the Hanson and Duncan match. Do you have any other matches that really stand out to you from your career as memorable?
Yeah, there's probably, well, there's a bunch, but I'll give you my two favorite matches of all time just because of the things that happened.
Okay.
We were in Rockford and I'm wrestling Billy Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
And Billy is a heel at the time. This is at the end of his career.
Okay.
And I was there with my buddy Jake, and I'm ready to go to the ring. And I walked up to Billy, and I said, Billy, I got to ask you, when you were a babyface, why were you such a prick? And I turned and went to the ring. And Jake looked at me and said, why did you do that? I said, let's see what he does.
Okay.
He made me look like Billy Robinson. He made me look like the world's greatest wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, he put me over like I was the world champion. I'd say out of the 15 minutes we went, I probably was in control for 14.
Why do you think that was?
I was throwing him all over the ring.
So why do you think that comment caused that? What do you think it was? Did he want to show you that he wasn't a prick?
I think he never was to me. I worked him three different times. And that was the only one that was memorable, but he didn't hurt me in any of the other ones.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that night he made me look like the world's greatest wrestler. And my other favorite match, this was one in Moline.
Oh.
This was 2 weeks after. Oh, there was one other highlight of that match after Billy. I was in the shower at Boylan High School and by myself showering. And there were four girls on after my match. It was Wendy Richter and I can't think of her name. It was Wendy and Judy Martin, Leilani Kai, and the other one who was always with them. She was like the ringleader. I can't think of her name. She just died about 2 years ago of cancer.
Okay.
Can't think of her name. They joined me in the shower.
Well, all right. Good night to be Tom Stone, huh?
They kept laughing. It wasn't. I mean, I knew them from Mid-South. I knew them, but. Anyways, then my second favorite match was actually against Jake Milliman.
Okay.
And this was in Moline for the AWA.
Mm-hmm.
We went out and we didn't do an opening match. We were the opening match, but we didn't do an opening match. We did one of our local main events. And we made sure that nobody could follow us. I mean, there was no way that any of the other matches were going to beat what we did. Even the referee looked at Jake, and I was as light as thin that night. And he said, Jake, Stone was really hopper. He could have hurt you. I didn't touch Jake. That was as light as I ever worked. And if the referee thought it looked that stiff, probably was a pretty good match.
Yeah.
So those are the matches I remember. I mean, there were other ones.
Well, yeah, especially since, I mean, you pretty much have worked everybody there is through that time period. I mean,
I mean, just for the humor in the wrestling matches, one night we were in Biloxi, Mississippi. It was me and Tank Patton against Ricky Fields and Terry Latham.
Okay.
And Tank was in the ring, and he had a hold on Ricky. And some fan kept yelling, "Hit him, Ricky, hit him." So Tank let go of Ricky's arm, let go of his arm, went over to the guy in the first throw and said, "Listen, I'm the heel. I'll call the fucking match." He went back and grabbed Ricky's arm, looked at Ricky, and as loud as he could, yelled, "Hit me, Ricky." And I'm in tears in the corner. I cannot take a tag. I'm laughing so fucking hard.
Oh, well, in 2021, you released your autobiography.
Yeah, but I got a fight with Amazon, so it's no longer there.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But the it's titled Professional Wrestling, The Theater of the Absurd, I Never Wanted to Be a Big Star. So tell us about that last little part that you included. I never wanted to be a big star.
If you read the book, and I will give it to anyone who sends me an email, and I've got it on PDF.
Okay.
The first words in my book are, I never wanted to be a big star, but then I said, not really.
Okay. So, well, what made you at that time to decide to write your autobiography?
There are a lot of stories that we tell whenever we see each other, guys like me and Jake or me and Hangman.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit and we tell the same old stories.
Sure.
Well, if I didn't write the book, they'd all be gone.
Right, yeah.
So that's why I wrote the book. It's more for me than anything. It wasn't like it was going to sell 1,000 copies.
Well, no, but it's still, I think it's important. And I think that's why podcasts like this are important, right? For documenting those stories and you know, like hearing you tell these stories, right? It's there. It's preserved. It's there for whatever reference it may need to be at whatever point in time. I'm a huge book guy.
So you know, that Moline match with Jake, that was 2 weeks after the Saito and Patera beating up the cops in Waukesha. I don't know how much you knew about that.
The McDonald's incident?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was their chauffeur that night. I drove them out to Watertown for the matches, and I drove them back, and I worked in Waukesha, and Ken said, "Do you want to go get something to eat?" And I said, "No." I said, "I got to go to work tomorrow." So I drove down through the McDonald's drive-thru and got something to eat.
Uh-huh.
If I had brought them down and let them walk back to the hotel,
never would have happened.
I mean, that would have happened.
No.
So the next Sunday, we were in Green Bay, and I stopped and bought two Big Macs for Ken.
Okay.
He laughed at it, but he found it funny. In Moline, when Saito walked in, I started humming the You Deserve a Break Today song, and he looked at me and he says, "I thought you were my friend. Next time I get you in the ring, I hurt you bad." He didn't.
Well, yeah, that whole incident's funny because I talked to Ken, it's been a couple of years probably now. There's always this discrepancy on who did what in that.
I know the whole story because one of the cops became a building inspector and I own buildings in Milwaukee, and we sat and talked about it. What actually happened was Ken threw the rock. I don't care. No one else could have picked it up.
Okay.
But then he went back up and he was like hiding out in the bath. The cops knocked on their door.
Uh-huh.
And Ken was hiding in the bathroom.
Okay.
And Saito goes, "He's not here. He's not here." And Saito was in just his underwear.
Okay.
And finally they kept pestering Saito. And Ken finally came out kind of in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the lady cop maced Saito.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what the cops are thinking, right? This is all fake. They don't realize that they have two Olympic athletes.
Right, yeah.
Who are 300 pounds. Who are not fake.
Yep, absolutely.
And so the lady cop, if they had just sort of pulled their guns, that would have been the end of it. But she jumped on Sato's back after macing him, and he just picked her up and threw her into the frickin' wall. I mean, none of that had to happen. All they had to do, Vern would have paid for the frickin' window.
Yeah, right.
So I blame it on the cops.
Yeah. Such a, I mean, one of those stories that'll forever be told about professional wrestling.
I mean, to say that it, yeah, okay, maybe it was predetermined. But if you looked at the roster that Vern had, everybody was either an ex-football player, even Greg Gagne played college football.
Yep, absolutely.
So they're either ex-football players or Mad Dog was a wrestler from in the Olympics.
Yep.
Baron was a wrestler in the Big
Elon.
Ten, and they're all Brunzell was a football player. I mean,
Yep.
come on. You can't be that dumb.
No, I wouldn't think so. But well, there you have it, right? Just straightened out by Tom Stone. That's what the what really happened.
That's what really happened.
So on the autobiography, you said, right? So it's no longer on Amazon. What
No
was
longer.
Amazon? Was the, were they not paying you your portion?
No, I had a couple other. I was doing some other book deals there, and they didn't like something I did, and they banned my account.
Ridiculous.
So,
Okay.
but if anyone wants it, I have an email, tom.rocky.stone at gmail. If you send me an email with that says book, I'll send you the PDF.
Very good. I'll have to get that for me, Tom. I've got a huge collection of wrestling books, but I don't believe I have yours.
I can send it to you. That's not a problem.
There you go. All right. Well, so yeah. So you've done all this wrestling, Tom. You worked for the electric company, all these different things. What's Tom Stone up to these days?
Tom Stone is retired.
There
Tom Stone doesn't do a whole lot. Tom Stone goes to the dog park with his husky.
you go. Oh, you got a husky.
I've had four of them.
Yeah.
I'm on my fourth one.
What's his name?
Pardon me?
What's the husky's name?
Wizard.
Wizard.
I
There
have
you go.
Wizard, I had Teddy, I had Timber, and I had Cooper.
There you go. I have two dogs. They're small though. It's a Shih Tzu and a little Jack Chi. They're small, but I love dogs. I'm a dog guy. And
So that's it. I go down, one of the local guys here runs a camp. I go down sometimes to his camp, but it's so poorly done. I mean, nowadays they take anybody who wants to pay them.
that's right. Yep.
And so the guy doing the training the other night was probably 115 pounds. And I'm sorry, the fans in the audience shouldn't be able to beat up the wrestlers.
Right, yeah. So you do still though, I mean, occasionally you say go to local shows
Yeah,
and
once in
just check
a
them
while.
out.
But
Just
I go, I don't even stay for the matches though anymore.
right,
I
okay.
go, I, it's a meet and greet for me, and then I go home.
Yeah. Well, do you ever get out there? Do you ever still stay in communication with any of the guys you worked with and things like that? I mean,
To be honest, I've only got the guys who I was real friendly with. I was friendly with Buck Zumhoff, who's
We all know that's,
no longer
yeah.
available to be talked to.
Yep.
I was friends with Baron. I still have his phone number, but I haven't talked to him in years.
Yeah.
I just reconnected with Luke the Bushwhacker
Oh, yeah.
on Facebook. He friended me.
Oh.
But then, other than that, Hangman Mike, I talk to probably once a month, and Jake, but that's really about it.
Yeah. Okay, well, so do you have any social media, any way for fans to connect with you that you like to put out there for them, or do you?
I'm on Facebook, but I'm not on it that much.
Okay, well, if
It,
anybody,
it, I'm under Tom Stone, so I can be
yeah,
found.
okay, well, if anybody wants to check it out, right, Facebook, Tom Stone, he gave you the email. If you'd like a copy, a PDF copy of his book, hit him up. He will email you that.
Yeah, they can hit me up on Facebook too.
Okay, or message him there, whatever. Yeah. Lots more stories in the book, but we hit a few of them there. Tom, thank you for your time, and give it to you. What we may have to have you on again because I'm sure you've just got a multitude of other stories that we can
Oh,
get into.
we could go on and on. I
I bet. Yeah.
didn't even get to some of the really good stuff.
Yeah. So We did briefly mention Indianapolis, right? Because we talked about Rooster Griffin. Did you ever encounter Dick the Bruiser in your time with the AWA and everything?
I worked for Dick the Bruiser one time. It was a show outside of Chicago at some little high school.
Okay.
And Dick was a funny guy.
Yeah.
To the job guys. Are you a worker or are you just a fan?
No, I was a worker briefly. But
Did you work for Dick?
No. This was after Dick.
Okay. Dick had his habit when he'd work, especially to guys who were new, and he'd use them, mm-hmm. and he'd say, "Kid, I'll catch you next time." That's how he got you to come to the next show.
Oh, okay.
He didn't do that to me. I'm sure he booked me through Vern.
Sure.
Because yeah. I'd never gone to Indy. Jake had gone to Indy and some other Milwaukee guys, but I never went to Indy.
Yeah.
And I worked with, I ended up working for Greg as a tag team. Sammy DeCiro.
Oh, yeah. Sammy DeCiro. Yeah, one of the Max brothers.
They wanted us to go. Bruiser wanted me to get close to 20 minutes and put Sammy over.
Mm-hmm.
I got 19 minutes and 57 seconds.
Yeah.
He pinned me. If I could have hung on for another 3 seconds.
Right on the money.
And he paid me right away. No problems.
Yeah.
Because I was waiting for him to try to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's always a talk of Dick the Bruiser and pay. I know him and Bruiser Brody had some issues overpaying a locker room one time, and
Bruiser Brody was my second match in St. Louis.
Really?
Yep, I wrestled two kids there the first night I went. Dan Diamond and Gary Young,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. they wouldn't let me grab a hold. They'd walk away when I tried to grab a hold. They made me take like 10 or 20 backdrops and body slams on the St. Louis ring, and I don't know if you've ever heard the St. Louis ring. I'd rather fall on the concrete road out in front of my house.
Right. Yeah.
God, it was hard.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs to where we all dressed, and Pat O'Connor says, "Stone, you got Brody." So I went over and introduced myself to Frank. This was before Frank had gallbladder surgery, and he was 320 pounds, V-shape, big shoulders that he lost. He didn't have those at the end.
Yeah, right.
But he had big shoulders.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, "Kid, in case I can't thank you afterwards, let me thank you now."
Yeah.
Which made me want to go get in the car and not get in the ring.
Felt like a warning.
Frank was fine. I wrestled Frank about four different times over my career. Once in the AWA and I think three times in St. Louis. And we actually became friends. He was a decent guy to me, even though he killed other people.
Yeah, right.
He beat one of the Texas Hangmen, Frank Veazey, who was Ricky Golden, I think, for the AWA. Mm-hmm. Later became Bull Payne.
Yeah, right.
And he beat the shit out of him on Minneapolis TV. You never knew. It was like Billy Robinson beat the hell out of Chris Curtis on Minneapolis TV. And he beat the hell out of him. He was my wrestling brother in town. His name is Ned Wicker, but I think he used Ted Wilson. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he beat the hell out of him on TV up there, too. So you never knew.
Yeah. I'd venture to guess in your time, you encountered many of those Indianapolis guys that I'm familiar with. Because of a lot of the cross-promoting with, you know, through Chicago with, Bruiser being with Vern and Wilbur in Chicago and
different things. I knew Regal and I knew Spike.
Yeah, right, yeah. And a lot of those guys worked, some of those guys worked St. Louis too.
Yeah, I mean, Spike worked for Vern.
Mm-hmm.
I think I met Huber down in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, there's definitely some cross-pollinating. It was, there guys going to and from. We may have to have you on again, Tom, and tell some more stories and everything. But until then, everybody, like I said, reach out to Tom, get the book, read it up, get some more stories there. Cause I'm sure there's plenty more in there that we didn't even get to.
I cover a lot of the local stuff that we did around here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we didn't even get to the fact, are you promoted shows?
I promoted shows locally. I didn't like being the promoter. I actually had a guy who booked us shows.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, he booked the shows and I booked the matches.
Yeah, gotcha.
Finishes and
yeah,
tried to do my best Buck Robley imitation.
There you go. So, yeah, there's plenty more that we can hear from Tom. So get the book. Reach out to Tom. Get the book. Tom, we'll have you back on in the future. Talk some more stories. Tell some more. But, yeah, I appreciate your time. Like I said, I keep it 45 minutes to an hour. Just give them that bit. Reach out to Tom. Get the book. Give it a read. That would be a good idea. Again, Tom, I'll hit you up. I'd like to get a copy.
Well, if nothing else, on a winter night, you can burn it in the fireplace and stay warm.
Hey, or well, whatever it takes.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle, all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to Tom for coming on the show. I'm going to have him back again in the future because he has lots more stories to tell us. So watch for that coming down the road. Guys, be sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. All you got to do is look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty, or on most of them, you can look up at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Also, go check out all of the other WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform, or you can just visit WrestleCopia.com for your central hub to check them all out. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account, and then download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. All right, guys. Next week, another fun episode. My guest is going to be the Blue Meanie. We're going to talk all about ECW and Philadelphia in general. It's a great interview with a great guy. It's not your run-of-the-mill interview. I don't just ask him all the same old career questions. I ask him other stuff, right? A little more opinion type stuff. Things that, you know, you don't, right? Everybody, we don't want to hear about every match he had in ECW. He's told all those stories. He has a podcast. He tells those stories there. He's told them in other interviews. So I try to be unique with my questioning and my discussions. It is a very, very fun episode. Meanie's a great, great guy. So much fun. Such a positive attitude, which we talk about, right? We talk about the attitude, the mental approach to things. All that's part of this discussion. It's really a good talk. So make sure you subscribe now so that you don't miss that episode next week or any other episode, right? Subscribe on your favorite platform. Hit that auto download. That way, every Wednesday, a new episode of Wrestling Nostalgia is in your platform, whatever you can call it, every Wednesday morning. There you go. Waiting for you. I think that's my sign, guys. I need to wrap this up. I'm mumbling my words. So, as I always do, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.